Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence podcast once again. And as always, I am Mallory Ortberg, also known as Dear Prudence. With us this week in the studio is a very exciting guest, Christina Grace, who I'm looking forward to introducing to you in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to talk about advice that works well for one subset of the population and terribly for another. If you have children, you're probably familiar with this concept, right? What works really well for one child does not work for another. Doesn't mean the advice is bad or good, just means that you have to bear in mind different people's temperaments and situations before you offer advice. And one piece of advice that is often given generally, I've noticed, seems to fall into this category where some people really need to hear it and some people really, really don't. And that advice is, you've probably heard it, you've definitely heard it if you've ever been on a plane, put on your own oxygen mask before helping others. It's great advice if you are on a plane that depressurizes, right? Absolutely perfect, spot-on advice there. No matter what type of person you are, that is good advice in that very specific situation. But it is often used in a more emotional and relational sense. And it's great for people who sometimes forget to advocate for their own needs or to set boundaries or to take time to make sure that their, like, basic, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs are met before they can turn to giving of themselves to others. So fabulous advice for that type of person. You know, remind yourself of that, listen to it, just internalize it. Fabulous. For the rest of us, and I include myself in this subset of the population, because I do a great job of meeting my own needs. I hear that and I think, my goodness, I should be putting on my oxygen mask all the time. And I forget that oxygen is something you need to breathe. It's not just whatever you feel like having. So some of us can hear it and think, I'm putting on my oxygen mask, when in fact, what you're doing is just ignoring other people. Don't mix up those two things. Do not confuse being self-centered and never helping anyone else out with putting on your own oxygen mask. Sort of like how sometimes people say, I don't know how to relax. I work too hard. How do I take time for myself? Not really sure. I always take time for myself. So if I were to say, oh, I really need to, like, push for more relaxation time, all I would do is relax. I need to remember that that is not the type of person that I am. And so any advice given to that type of person who pushes themselves too hard, never rests, never does stuff that they want to do just for fun, that's not going to work for me. So ask yourself, am I the person who needs to be encouraged to put on an oxygen mask? Or am I a person who put their oxygen mask on ages ago and is just, like, hanging out in my seat while everyone around me is gasping for air? You be the judge. All right. This week in the studio, we've got Christina Grace, who is one half of the Unfriendly Black Hotties, which is a podcast about higher education and pop culture. Christina, welcome.
Mallory, thank you so much for having me.
I thank you for being had. I have been looking forward to this for weeks. I love all of our conversations, and I've been really looking forward to getting you on the show and hearing you conversation with me professionally.
I'm so excited to conversation with you.
I am too. Have you been kind of thinking through, like, what's the one piece of, like, advice I want to give everyone? What do I want my legacy to be on the Dear Prudence show?
Well, see, I've been concerned because we both have such a reaction to, say, murder as our go-to advice. And I just think that maybe we both shouldn't encourage a lot of murder today.
You know, I think that's a great point. And let's hold that as our highest and best principle today. We will not tell any of our letter writers to commit, let's go with a crime of any kind.
Okay. I can work with that.
All right. Well, luckily, we don't have any questions like that on the docket today. So I think we're going to be able to make it through with our goal intact. But we are going to start with a question that kind of has to do with when to speak up and when not to. And I'm excited to tackle it. Do you want to go ahead and read our first letter?
Oh, wow. What an honor. Of course. I would love to.
Thank you.
Subject: trouble with church. My husband is a preacher's kid, although he's not religious now. His father is a pastor, and we attend church whenever we visit his in-laws. My husband has a lot of complicated feelings about his family's church. Before our last visit, my husband was adamant that we would not attend services because we do not believe in their fundamentalist teachings. But when we were with his in-laws, he changed his mind, and we went after all. I am torn about whether or not we should say something and stop attending, or just get along to get along. We both agree that if we have children, they will not be attending. But until then, what should we do?
This is exciting. Good news is you have a couple of different options. I don't think that there's one only reasonable option to take here. I think the important thing for me to bear in mind as I think about which one to advise them to take is the fact that they've both decided if they're going to have children, they're not going to attend, which means you guys presumably think it's likely that at some point in the future, you're going to have the conversation. So I think you should bear that in mind, that, like, it will be easier to have this conversation now as opposed to a couple years from now when there's actual kids involved. So, you know, if you were thinking, we could maybe ride this out for the rest of their lives going to church once or twice a year. But if your goal is to eventually have this conversation, I think it might be a good idea to start thinking about how can we start having it now?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the fact that they have decided this thing about if we have kids, we won't be going to this church, that kind of makes it a little easier to think about ways to start having that conversation with the in-laws. And I mean, I think you should talk to your husband before you talk to your in-laws with regards to when you should have this conversation.
Oh, God, yeah. No, and I think the husband should be having this conversation.
Like, yeah, he should definitely take the lead on the conversation.
Yeah, there should be a team effort, but a husband-led action.
Right, because he's the one with the complicated feelings. The letter writer seems pretty set on not going. And you know, he's the one whose mind ends up changing and going. So chat with him and say, listen, like, is this something that we need to have a conversation about right now with your parents? And how do you want to do that? And, I'm here to support you in any way.
Right. Because, you know, again, it really depends on what type of relationship you guys have with your husband's parents and what type of relationship you want to have. Like, maybe you're the type of non-churchgoer who's like, I'm a really strong atheist. It's really important to me that they know this about me at some point. And it would, like, really... it would not be easy for me to just go a couple times a year. Like, it would really go against my beliefs. I want to make it really clear. I don't believe in God. I don't want to go to church. And that's a firm line I want to draw, which is fine. Or you might be the kind of people who feel like, I am comfortable going once or twice a year, but I don't have to have the conversation about my beliefs with them, but I do want to make it clear that I'm not a fundamentalist, and kind of everything in between, right? So you and your husband should figure out, do we want to just let them know, hey, we're totally willing to go to church with you, but you should be aware that we ourselves are not believers. We're just going because we love you and, like, we're perfectly happy to, like, see the value in a church service. Or if you feel like, on the other hand, if their church is, like, espousing beliefs that you really, really strongly disagree with, you're going to have to say, like, hey, we're not going to come to church with you and here's why. And, like, some of these conversations will have more follow-up conflict than others.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was interested in that he changed his mind and we went after all, because there's no real context there. Did he change his mind because your in-laws were demanding that you guys go to church? Or did he change his mind because he got there and realized, you know, it doesn't matter that much to me. It would be easier to go at this moment than have a big conversation and fight about it.
Right.
So I feel like it's It doesn't seem like it'll be that challenging of a conversation. Granted, I don't know how the in-laws would feel about it, but at least with you, you and your husband are on the same page, and I think that's really important.
Right. And I mean, I get that. Like, for a lot of people who grew up quite religious, especially for people who grew up with parents who are, like, members of the clergy, there's this real push and pull, right? There's times when it's like, I'm so tired of this religion. I'm so against it. I never want to go again. I'm really frustrated. And then there's this moment of, like, you know, there were good parts of it too. I have nostalgia for it. I like remember this mm-hmm. aspect fondly, or just this sense of, I really love my parents and this thing is between us. And if we really had an honest conversation about it, I feel like they would be so afraid for me or so upset for me or so angry for me that it would limit our ability to be close. And I don't want that. So again, I really think like this is a conversation where you have to find out from your husband, like, what's the worst case scenario to you? Like, what are you willing to compromise on? What are you willing to not be tremendously, like, scrupulously honest about? Which is not to say, like, pretend to be like half a fundamentalist, because that's pretty hard to do. But like,
right, sure.
What would be the worst case scenario for you? And like, what's hard for you when you're around your parents? Yeah, maybe there's pressure, or maybe there's just a sense of like, I'm home with my family. They'd be so upset if we didn't go to church. It's just an hour and a half. Something that seemed easy to do when I was in my apartment in my secular life now feels harder to do when I'm at my childhood home and relating to my parents as their kid. You know, that may have been some of what weakened him in the moment. But yeah, you guys should figure it out. And if you're really adamant, like, we are not going to do this with our kids, like, you should prepare them. Because if they think right now that you're kind of on board with fundamentalism, and then you have children and you're like, psych, we're not religious at all, and our kids will be going to no amount of church, that will be a huge, that'll be a huge thing.
Yeah, definitely have that conversation before kids are involved.
Yeah, let them freak out now. And then by the time kids come around, you know, it might still be a sore point. You might have to set some other limits, but at least there won't be this sense of, I think what would be hard about springing it on them once you have kids is now there's like a specific soul at stake for them, right? It's
right.
Like, yeah, it's not just
sure.
hypothetical children. It's this child who you are preventing from being saved. And hopefully that's not the way that they see it. But, you know, if they go to a fundamentalist church, it may be. So, yeah, talk with your husband and talk with your in-laws and do it. You know, if you're going to have the conversation, do it before your next visit is scheduled, right? Don't bring it up like, hey, we're getting into town tomorrow. Heads up, we're not coming to church.
Yes, do not do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a process. Good luck. I hope that they can, you know, understand. And even if their initial response is like too big or too emotional or pressure-y, that they're able to eventually say like, okay, we love you. This is tricky for us, but we're not going to force you to come to church. You're an adult. We get it. We can try to understand and love each other.
Yeah, I have faith in them.
Yeah, faith. I see.
They're going to nail it, I think.
Yeah, I think you guys are going to do great. Speaking of which, I have so many thoughts about this next one, but I'm not sure where I land. But I'm really excited to kind of like talk through all the different possibilities, because this is a really
exciting. There are so many possibilities in this one.
Right? This is a unique letter, I feel like. So I'll go ahead and read this one and we can tackle it next. So the subject of this one is family co-op. I'm a single mother by choice, serving the last year of my contract with the Air Force. I know that my choice to have a child as a single military mother would be difficult, and I discussed the decision at length with my parents. They assured me that they supported my decision and would help me out in whatever way they could. A year after my daughter was born, I got orders to go to Korea for a year. I couldn't bring her with me, so she stayed with my parents. After discussing it at length, my parents sold their house and moved into a farm that I own. My daughter has been having the time of her life out in the country. She seems so happy there that I'm not sure whether to bring her back with me now that I'm back in the United States for the final year of my contract. I live about a 7-hour drive away, and I change shift every 10 days, which is hell when it comes to scheduling childcare. After I separate from the military next February, I plan on moving into the farm as well. My concerns are that my daughter will spend some of the formative years of her development with minimal interaction with me, and that she's too isolated out on the farm. She doesn't go to daycare or interact with other children, just her grandparents. I went to the farm for 2 weeks over Christmas, and I'm worried that my daughter isn't being challenged. She seemed behind in several things: speech, the ability to follow instructions, and several other things. My parents don't want to take her to a daycare because it's a long drive into town and they have morning chores on the farm, but I'm concerned that my daughter is not at the level she should be. I don't know if I should insist. For one thing, every child is different, and maybe she's doing perfectly fine. She'll have to go to preschool eventually. Maybe she'll get caught up then. But I also feel like I've given up my authority on my own child by having her live with my parents in the first place. I want to bring her back to live with me desperately, but it seems selfish to drag her out of an idyllic home away from the people she knows better than me. Do you think this arrangement is healthy, if unorthodox, or should I try to take my daughter back to live with me, even if the transition and my duty assignment makes life difficult for both of us? Woo!
There are so many choices, so many options.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, sort of the most pressing question to me is that this letter writer worries that she's given up her authority on her own child by having her live with her parents for the first place. And I just want to say, nope, you're still her mother.
Yep, I agree.
You've made some difficult decisions that are like short term. This is not permanent. You're not going to, you know, you weren't in Korea for 10 years. Like, you made some tough calls, but none of this in any way like abdicated your rights as a mother. So,
yep, you're still her mom.
Yep, absolutely. Sure. You get to make the choice that you think is best for her. And you might do that with like discussion with your parents. You might do that with discussion with her pediatrician. You know, but yeah, you do get to make the final choice. They have not like taken over the right of like final decision just because you had to go to Korea for a year.
Yes, this is very true. Also, this concern that she's going to spend formative years without her mother, I feel like she's so young that it might not be as devastating as the letter writer thinks it is for her daughter to not have constant interaction with her mother at this stage in her life.
I wonder if it's more just that she's feeling sad that
that she's missing those when you're forming big moments.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Not that they won't be able to make up for it later, but just this kind of sense of I am missing out on a stage that I would love to be present for. And it sounds like that was part of the like difficult calculus that went into making the decision.
Right.
Do I want to have a child, even as a single parent, even in the military? Mm-hmm. So I get that, and I do understand wanting to have that. I would want that if I were in her situation. So
absolutely.
I hear it.
But this bigger question.
Yeah, I mean, based on the timeline of this letter, it kind of sounds like her daughter is maybe about between 1.5 and 2 years old.
That's what I was thinking.
So, again, I am not a child development expert, so I don't want to say, like, there's this very clear-cut milestone your daughter is missing, or it's too soon to say. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, within the range of 1.5 to 2 years old, there's a lot of leeway for speech development and following instructions. Like, I don't know what two-year-olds are great at following instructions.
Yeah, if that's a skill, we were supposed to develop it, too. I am also missing some milestones, so.
Yeah. I wonder, like, nothing in that leapt out to me as like, oh, that's definitely a flag for like assessment and intervention. Like, it sounds maybe a little bit more like first child anxiety,
yeah.
Right? Of just like, mm-hmm. Is my kid normal? Is my and I don't even know that normal is the right word to use there, but that's kind of the anxiety that often parents can experience. So like, if you're genuinely concerned about her development, like, take her into the pediatrician and say like, here are my concerns. Can you either like let me know if I'm being a little overly anxious or if this is something that we should keep an eye out for? And that might help you make your next decision, right? And I think you should go, like, if possible, like, you should make the visit with your daughter. And I don't know if how you would be able to arrange that, if you would go down to the farm and get her, or if you would have your parents bring her up and take her where you live. But like, take her to a pediatrician and like get a qualified medical assessment. Because that will hopefully be able to put your mind at ease, and you'll be able to see, okay, she's like actually like within the range of kind of average 1.5 year old behavior.
Yeah, and I think once your mind is at ease, that will allow you to make this kind of bigger decision a little easier. And I mean, my gut is kind of like, don't move your child from where she's very happy living on a farm. That sounds so idyllic and charming. I understand the desire to, you know, want your daughter with you at all times, but it just doesn't sound like, based on this letter, that your daughter is happy currently, and that moving back with you where you have to change shifts and you live 7 hours from your parents, it just doesn't seem like the best situation for her, especially since you plan on moving to the farm in a year or so.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to come down a little bit on the other side, but to your last point, I think the really crucial thing to remember here is whatever decision you make will last a year.
Mm-hmm.
Neither option seems like it will harm your daughter in some lasting way, right? So you can at least put that anxiety aside and you think, whatever I decide, in a year's time, I will be living with my daughter full time. I will be able to like better see her daily progress, make sure that she interacts with other children, spend time with her, interact with her, get to develop my own independent relationship with her. And that's all coming. So none of this is the sort of question of like, man, if I choose one or the other, am I like running the risk of negatively affecting her entire childhood? This is, it's all going to be okay. And I think if you bear that in mind, that will help you make a decision because it won't feel so much like, ah, my two choices here are happy daughter or daughter who knows her mother. Those are not two choices that you have to decide between.
What is your feeling on the other side?
I mean, I think like you want your child to be with you. You're back in the United States. I think, you know, you should spend more time with your daughter if that's what you want. And it sounds like that's what you want. Like, I don't think she will, obviously it will be like a challenging transition. Mm-hmm. But I think you should at least consider it. Like, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. And like, if you can figure out how you would navigate childcare, like whatever resources are available to you as a member of the military, like definitely investigate that. Figure out if there would be ways that you could even like have your parents come up once a month. Like, again, I realize that they have a lot of chores on the farm. They can't just drop that. But if there's any way you could manage that, like to spare one of them once a month would be fabulous. But yeah, you absolutely can do that. It will not damage your daughter. Kids, you know, she will not be like harmed by spending time with you. You will not be like traumatizing her, I don't think. Again, you may ultimately decide the farm is better, but like it would also be great for her to like not just get to know you, but to also be around other young kids and interact with people who aren't just her grandparents. Again, it's hard because it's like neither one of these things is bad, right? Like, it's not bad to spend your first couple years of life mostly interacting with your grandparents. Like, it's not going to hurt you. It's not like you're growing up in Rapunzel's Tower for the first 18 years of your life.
True.
And it's also not bad to move to be with your mom. Like, neither one of these sounds like, oh man, that would traumatize your kid. That would like deeply hold her back. And especially because you're concerned that she's not spending enough time with other kids. And you would like to like spend more time with her because she's your kid.
She's your kid,
At least take it into consideration. But yeah, I would say first and foremost, take her to a pediatrician, see how she's doing. If they're at all concerned, then that might tip you over into the category of having her with you. If they're like, nope, she's doing great. She's just 18 months old and they don't listen to anybody. Then you might consider putting it off for a year and then, you know, getting to kind of start the next phase of your life together.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that it sounds like everyone involved is a really good person who has your kid's best interests at heart and is doing the best they can. And that regardless of what happens, it's only going to be a year. And that ultimately you guys will all be living together. Frankly, this sounds really cozy. Like, you sound like you have a great relationship with your parents. They sound like they really love your daughter. You guys are going to have this wonderful, like, ramshackle, multi-generational, like, cozy-ass farm situation.
I'm very into that.
I'm kind of jealous, actually.
Yeah, same.
But good luck. Yeah, I think whatever you do, you're going to be okay and your kid's going to be okay. Christina.
Mallory.
I want to sneak a surprise letter on you.
Oh my God.
This one popped up just today and it was so in your wheelhouse. I couldn't not.
Okay. All right. Bring it on.
Do you forgive me?
You are forgiven. You are not in trouble.
Good. Thank goodness. All right. So the subject of this one is very strange situation.
Oh God.
I'm a gay man in my 30s. Kathy is my best friend. Last week, we were hanging out together one night at her place. One thing led to another, and we had sex. To my great surprise, I loved it. We even had sex again the next morning. I've always been attracted to some women, but I'd never slept with one before. Now I'm feeling confused. If she was a man, or if I was straight, I'd be making weekend plans with her, hoping that this might lead to a relationship. I suspect Kathy might be up for this. We love one another's company, and now we know that we like having sex together. We have talked since then, but we haven't discussed our night together. But I also think that our friends would freak out. And I'm gay. There's no such category as a gay man who's sleeping with a woman. What should I do? Christina, is there a category for gay man who is sleeping with a woman?
Yes. That category is called bisexuality, which is, I think, what you are, my friend. Yay. Nailed it.
I think you figured it out. Hooray.
Cool. Good talk.
Yeah. Should we just move on?
I think we're all set there.
I do want to give him a tiny bit more advice than that.
Same.
But this kind of illustrated something that I think is really fascinating, which is I think a lot of people assume that bisexuality means you are 50-50 attracted to men and women. And you have like dated an equal amount of both. Like you've got some sort of ledger in your mind. And every time you sleep with a guy, you add a woman to your list, and vice versa. And you're always attracted to both the exact same amount your entire life. Do you think that's an accurate definition of bisexuality?
I really don't think it is. I do think that my ledger is probably missing some equal tallies. But no, like people are bisexual. People discover that they are bisexual later in life sometimes. It can, in fact, be confusing, but it does not make it any less of a thing. And, you know, good for you, guy. You had like good sex and maybe with someone who wants to be in a relationship with you for a bit. Like that seems like a positive.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's absolutely positive to be bisexual and like lean mostly gay like that. Yeah. Sounds like it may be your deal. You may eventually find another word or identity that you prefer, and that's fantastic too. But you can absolutely be bisexual and be mostly attracted to other men, mostly date other men. And then every once in a while, a woman pops up and you're like, this is interesting to me. And that's great. That's still bisexual. So you don't have to worry about what this is, because there's a name for this, and a lot of people do it.
Yeah,
you know?
We've got
like
a name for it.
It happens. Yeah, no, there's totally a word for what this is. You are not alone, my friend. Yeah, and if you would like to, I think you should talk to Kathy, and I think you should say, hey, love spending time with you. Kind of surprised by the fact that I enjoyed having sex with you, because I've never slept with a woman before. But seems like I'm a bit bisexual, and I'd sure love to go out with you. Are you up for it? And she will either say yes, and you guys will get to go out and figure out what happens next, or she will say, nope, thank you very much. I love being your friend, and we had sex one time, but I'm not interested in taking it any further. And then that solves your situation with Kathy. And, you know, whether or not she wants to go out with you, like, you know, it may be that no other woman pops up on your radar, and that's kind of the end of that side of the story. It may be that occasionally, like, a woman does, and that's... Like, either way, it's fine. And I think you can bring it up to your friends in whatever degree you feel comfortable. Like, I don't think you should let your friend's reaction drive what you do. But I also don't want to, like, pretend that that won't happen. Like, I think you know your friends pretty well. And if you feel like they might freak out, there's a good chance that they will. Do you have any thoughts about that, Christina?
I mean, it's possible. And again, I think, you know, that's the correct assumption. If you think your friends are going to freak out, then it's probably because you know them pretty well and they truly might freak out. But I think you are well within your rights to say, this is something that is real. This is something that I feel. And kind of regardless of your feelings about my situation, these are my feelings and it is my situation. And they don't get to dictate your sexuality any more than anybody does, in that they don't get to do it at all, because your sexuality is for you. And your sexuality is bisexuality, it turns out.
Yeah. And if they freak out, like, that's also fine. Like, it's super dramatic, right? Like, it's always exciting when, like, two friends in your circle get together, especially
nothing
when
better.
Like, one of them you didn't know was attracted to that person's gender. That's always, like, a fun kind of freak out. And so hopefully they will lean towards the, oh, my goodness, you and Kathy never saw this coming. This is wild. Tell me everything. I hope that's the kind of freak out that they produce. And if they're a little, like, shittier about it, then, you know... you can just let them know, like, you can even preface it, right? Like, you can say, hey, I'm kind of nervous about telling you.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that's really come up a lot for me before, although I have occasionally been attracted to women in the past. Haven't really shared it. Didn't really think that that was ever going to be a part of my romantic life, but it is. And I really would love, like, your support. And a good friend will hear that and will tamp down any freak out they may be having. And he'll like, oh, you are telling me that you're nervous about telling me and that you would like my support. You're telling me exactly what you need from me as a friend. I can do that. And then hopefully they will be able to do that. And if they need to freak out, they can do it quietly on their own time.
Yeah. Setting expectations for conversations like that with your friends or with your family is incredibly helpful. And if you get to say, hey, I'm a little nervous about this, then if your friends are good people, as I feel like they probably are, then they will say, mm-hmm. All right, this doesn't have to be about me and my reaction right now. It can be about supporting my friend. And then everyone can move on.
And you can make it really clear, like,
yeah,
like, I'm bisexual, mostly date men, mostly like men. Like, that's still true about me. I don't have this like big reveal. But like, I'm just adding to that. Turns out I'm a little more bisexual, not a little more bisexual. I don't want to like quantify it. Like there's some sort of percentage amount you can have. But yeah, like turns out I am bisexual and I'm going to try to date this lady. And if you would rather hold off on that, like you do not have to announce to everyone that you know that you guys have gone on a date. Like if you would like to take a little time and figure out what this means for you and Kathy, like one on one, you can do that. And then if you want to talk about it with your friends, you absolutely can. If you'd rather wait, you can do that. You can disclose your bisexuality without getting to the specifics of who you're dating. That's always okay. You can always say that you are bisexual, even if you don't have like some person to act as evidence with sometimes, which sometimes people will demand.
People do demand that a lot.
Yeah, like bring forth the bisexual evidence.
Yes. Point to both a man and a woman that you are attracted to, and then thus you will be bisexual. That's not how it works.
Oh, and not even attracted to. Like we need proof. Like bring forth the like bloodstained sheets of your bisexual experience. It was either that or receipts, and I felt like this didn't really call for receipts, so I went with the bloodstained sheets. Yeah, and that's a little bit goofy. Like, yeah, that's a little bit goofy.
Everything's a little goofy, but mostly, like, you're bisexual. You have some fun options in front of you. And welcome to the club, because we're the best.
Also, I feel like this was a movie from the 90s. I feel like this was two movies from the 90s. One of them was called The Sweetest Thing.
Sure.
And one of them starred Madonna and Rupert Everett, I want to say. And the other one stars Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd. But I don't know which one is which. And I don't know which one is called The Sweetest Thing.
Okay. So The Sweetest Thing is the Rupert Everett one. And The Object of My Affection is the Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd one.
I love you so much. There were so many movies in the 90s that were basically just subtitled, we don't know what the word bisexuality is, because that was also when Chasing Amy came out, and all of those movies were just really confused by the idea that you could sometimes date people of various genders, not even just two. Like, there's kind of more than
there's
two.
There's kind
sometimes.
Of more than two genders, it turns out. Yeah, that was a whole subset of the 90s.
Yeah, but there was just a whole thing of like, oh, this gay person and the straight person slept together. What are we going to do about it? Because obviously there's no word for that. And it's like, there's a word for it. And now we have it. We actually had it then too. Thank you. Okay. But yeah, congratulations, letter writer. You're bisexual, or you can be if you want to be. No one's going to make you join, but you
no one's gonna
are welcome
make you.
To if you would like to. Hooray. I think we did it.
Woo-hoo. I think we nailed it.
All right, I'm going to take this one. The subject of this one is Angry Harridan, and I just want to thank the letter writer for using the word Harridan. I don't think I've gotten to say that on the air yet.
Same.
And that's the last lighthearted thing I will say about this subject. My husband recently helped his sister get out of an abusive marriage. It's been a long haul, and her ex left her with a broken arm. The whole family is so relieved, except me. I'm glad that my sister-in-law is free and safe. However, my husband never told me that that was what he'd been doing for the last 6 months. He's been lying to me about where he's been and what he's been doing because his sister didn't want anyone to know how bad it was. I thought he was having an affair. I'd been considering leaving him. Instead, it turned out that he's a hero who was protecting his sister. So why can't I stop being so angry? I can't get over how easy it was for him to lie repeatedly to me, even if it was for a good cause. I hate myself for being so petty, but that just makes me angrier at him. Woo!
Okay, so here's the thing. When I first read this letter, my gut reaction was that I really need to create some sort of pamphlet for people on how to behave when today is not your day. Today is not about you, ma'am. I understand that your husband, feeling like your husband was cheating on you for 6 months and realizing that he was protecting his sister is a bit of a heavy thing to switch and have to suddenly feel very happy. But I just, girl, he was doing like a really good thing, and I just can't imagine still being angry at him about this. I just can't fathom it.
I think I'm inclined to be a little bit more sympathetic to the letter writer. Not to say that
that's
this person's feelings should be driving the day. But yeah, I mean, I think she's kind of aware, right? Like that her anger should not be the primary emotion driving this conversation.
Yes,
I think that's part of what's hard.
And that's good.
It's she's like, what do I do with this anger? I know I can't yell at him because he was doing something really, really good. But this last 6 months were also really hard for me. And even though I now know that it was for like a necessary cause, I still have these feelings. So I think like you were right to write to a third person and not like take this to your husband or your family. Like that was the right outlet for you. And I think, I think on the one hand, Although I'm generally in the camp of like, you should generally tell your partner stuff. I also understand the need for secrecy when it's like, I mean, if he left her with a broken arm, like it sounds like this was probably a matter of like life and death. And I'm trying to think like, would it have been appropriate for him to say like, I'm helping someone with something. I can't talk about it too much. Like, I don't know how he could have revealed a little bit without revealing everything.
Yeah, I don't think he could have.
And again, like, ideally, you guys would have the kind of partnership where he could have said, like, this is what I'm doing. I'm telling you because you're my wife and because we can keep each other's secrets. But, like, that's also hard because that adds one more person to this list of, like, I need as few people as possible to know about this so I can leave my abusive husband. Like, that's tricky. I don't know that it would have been okay for him to tell you over 6 months what he was doing. Like, that's hard. That's it's hard for me to make a ruling on that. So I think just go to therapy, you know?
I think so, too.
Like, go to therapy.
Yep, totally agree.
Definitely by yourself for a while. Maybe later it will be, like, because I think you can say these things to him, right? Like, I don't think you should come to him when it's still raw and angry and there's a part of you that mm-hmm. resents him for having done something so good that it feels like you can't have hurt feelings about it, because you can. You get to have lousy feelings about good stuff all the time. You're a human being. You get to. But I think the, like, ugliest and messiest of this stuff should be at a therapist. And I think you have the right to talk about it. Like, I don't think you should have to just put on a brave face, forget about it, pretend it didn't happen. Like, absolutely go to a therapist and just for, like, once a week for, like, a month, just be really selfish and just be like, and this happened and I felt this and that and that and that. And then maybe you can, like, talk about it with your husband in a way that's not, like, immediately dumping on him.
Yeah, I think talking to someone else will be incredibly helpful. I think you'll be able to kind of pull apart why you were so angry and how him lying to you made you feel for 6 months. And then you'll be able to come to him and say, hey, listen, this time, X amount of months or years ago, was hard for me for these reasons. I get it. I'm over it now. But I do want you to know, because you are my husband and I have these feelings, that this happened and I felt this way. Because you do get to feel your feelings. But
right.
Her husband's sister being left with a broken arm just makes me think that this was such a dire situation that he really could not afford to tell anyone.
Right. And it's, you know, it's his sister and it's her safety. And again, right. Like, hopefully this is not a subject that will come up again. Right. Like, mm-hmm. This will, you know, he does not have other sisters also in abusive situations that nobody knows about. Like, even if in the future her husband were to come back, you would now have the information that she was trying to leave him. So that it wouldn't be a surprise. Like, I don't think this is a situation that will repeat itself in your marriage.
Yeah,
and this is kind
like
of one of the few. Yeah, this is one of the few exceptions where I kind of understand the need for not disclosing. Mm-hmm. But like, it's really fair to just say, like, even though you're not wrong, I'm still hurt. Like, and I think your husband should be able to acknowledge that, like, you did not know for those 6 months what he was doing when he was gone. And so that's still real. And, like, I don't even know that you have to wait until you're totally past it. You might not get totally past it. Like, this might be something that is tender for you for a long time. That's not to say it won't ever get better, that you won't ever feel a little more serene about it. But I don't think that you have to think, like, okay, my next move is just swallow this, forget it ever happened, pretend it didn't bother me, get done. Like, you know, you can say, hey, I love you so much. I'm so happy for your sister. I think what you did was incredible. It was also really hard for me over the last 6 months to not know where you were and what you were doing. And even though I know now, I've still got a lot of feelings and I want to deal with them appropriately. I don't want to resent you. I don't want to take it out on you. I understand why you did what you did. But I'm going to therapy to kind of handle these feelings. And I want you to know, because I love you and I want you to know me. And I want to be able to support each other. And, like, my feelings matter here, too. They're not the, like, front and center of the situation, which is why I'm going to a therapist right now to handle it kind of appropriately. But I want you to know. And maybe eventually you guys can have a couple of sessions together and just kind of say, like, he didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but I'm still hurt. And we want to, like, talk about this. And, like, maybe hearing from him, like, it was really hard to not tell you. I really wanted to share it with you. Maybe that would be helpful to you when it comes to, like, putting this in, like, its right size, right place.
That was really beautiful. I feel kind of bad for my first reaction, but I don't That was my gut. And I do think you get to say your feelings to your husband. That's part of being married. And I think once you kind of work through it a little bit with someone else, with a third party who doesn't immediately have a reaction in this like immediate family dynamic, then I think it'll be a little easier for you to talk to him and say.
That is so true. Because it's not going to be helpful to talk to someone who's like, my kid, my sister just escaped an abusive marriage, right? Like,
right.
That is Everyone's a situation where. Yeah, exactly. And a therapist will just be able to hear that and be like, okay, awesome. Let's talk about, not awesome, sorry, but like, let's discuss this. And that will be really helpful to you. I also think do something really nice for your sister-in-law, you know?
Yeah.
Make her a casserole, write her a note, do something that takes you out of yourself. Even if you still feel resentful when you're doing it, just, you know, even if I'm sure you've already like been really great about it, but just like perform an act of service for her, mm-hmm. because even if you don't feel really generously towards her right now, you should act really generously towards her right now, because that will help you feel loving if you act loving to her. And that will also make a big difference in terms of how you can talk about this with your husband, if you've also not taken that resentment out by being distant from her.
Yeah, it'd be a good way to put that in perspective for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Get her a gift certificate for a massage, buy her favorite, whatever, get her a book, take her out to lunch, just kind of spend the next couple of months occasionally doing something nice for her that you might not otherwise, because it will just go a long way towards healing that sense of like that angry little animal in the middle of your heart that's just kind of like, no one's paying attention to me. So I'd say therapy to take care of you, and also acts of service to remind you that there's more than just you.
I agree. I think it's perfect.
Man, what a day.
What a day. What a moment in time.
We didn't tell anyone to commit a crime.
I'm very proud of us.
Christina, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was fabulous.
Mallory, thank you so much for having me.
I want to offer this last piece of information to readers of the column and listeners of the podcast. We are now closed to feedback about the COT. The COT, in case you have not been listening regularly or missed that column, was about a woman who had lent a COT to a friend of hers whose child had died, and who, as part of her religious tradition, was burning the belongings of the child and was worried that she wasn't going to get the COT back. And This one took me by surprise. I think this might have been the most controversial answer I've yet given, and just heard from a handful of very determined folks who feel real strongly that she should ask for that COT back. I'm just letting you know, we are now closed to the COT story. It's done. We're, you know, if you still disagree, I just encourage you to do that at home. Quietly, we're just not going to take any more. I still feel pretty strongly about it. No one has yet come up with a really convincing, compassionate, loving way to ask this grieving mother to give back the COT in a way that feels like, yep, that's appropriate. That's not going to add to a bereaved mother's trauma. Just not a way to do it. If you want to start your own podcast about the COT, I guess you're welcome to. I think that's not a great reason to start a podcast. You should at least have one or two other things you have really strong feelings about to sort of, you know, tie it into a sort of larger premise. But again, it's your podcast. You can do what you want. You're all fabulous, but I'm done. I'm done with the COT. It's over. I'm sorry. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. And Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you like the show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. It helps the circle of advice continue. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute, tops. That number again is 401-371-DEAR.